sometimes I just feel like I'm always looking in at myself and I'm not looking at the guy across the street.
Thank you.
I'm asking a question for one of the members of our fraternity. We were discussing this. How did the Franciscans get a role in the UN? Is it true that the Franciscans have a role in the UN?
Mm-hmm.
And are those the priests? Are they seculars? How? Tell us about Franciscans and how they're perceived worldwide, that they can have a position on the UN.
Anybody want to?
I can't speak very intelligently about it, but they're one of the, what do they call them? A non-governmental agency. There's about 40 or 50 of them at the UN, and they advocate for issues that concern the church, and in our case, particularly issues that concern poverty and justice in the world and so on. And they do send out emails, and they might send out paper copies of things too. And I think you can get on them if you go online. And what's the exact title of it? Does anybody know? Franciscans International, exactly right. I get their emails occasionally, and they tell you what they're doing and so on. Do you want to say more about it?
I worked with FI for a little bit. I was asked to host an event for AIDS awareness. And so I went to the FI offices to work on that, and it was comprised of people of all faiths. So there was the Franciscans, me being a Catholic, then there was Lutherans, there was Methodists, there was imams, and just different people. But the experience was just awesome to just be in the presence of all of these different faith communities, but with this one common goal, which was to bring awareness to the plight of AIDS and HIV at the time. And this was during, I think this was either during or a little bit after the Clinton administration. So we wanted to bring more awareness to the administration to do something, not just here, but also abroad. Because as you know, in Africa, it's huge. And there's so many orphaned children because of AIDS and HIV. But the experience there at Franciscans International was very rewarding. I didn't spend a lot of time with them just on that one project, but it gave me such a grounding in the work that they do there at the UN, and just the ground level commitments. Father mentioned poverty, which is close to my heart, hunger and poverty, especially in America. We claim to be one of the wealthiest countries, and yet the poverty rate here is just through the roof. It's just, absolutely ridiculous. So to work on those kinds of issues was, that's where I took my being into doing, if you will, And it doesn't take a lot. It's small things. I was just at St. Francis Church being animator, and they called me to help out with this ministry, and it culminated into a prayer service, and we had a wonderful big celebration, and we needed funding. So of course, me being at St. Francis, I got the pastor at St. Francis to give a donation. I got my local fraternity to give a donation. I got my region to give a donation. And then I got like 15 of my friends to give a donation. So the journal looked like a Franciscan journal, you know, because everyone took out an ad that mentioned St. Francis. And what I loved about that was that anybody who was at that celebration and received that journal, the Franciscans were front and foremost. You know, we were able to hire drummers who led the procession in, you know, and we were able to have the funds to pay these drummers. They were, of course, friends of mine. I knew these drummers. But that was my, you know, I thought when I came into that ministry that I wouldn't be able to contribute much because I don't know the, you know, all of the statistics, and it's like, well, what could I do? This is so big, you know, HIV and AIDS. But I was able at the end to pretty much put on this this celebration, this liturgical celebration, getting the drummers, getting most of the funding, you know, and even the woman in charge was, you know, doubting that we could do what we said we could do. And I said to her, Katie, the Holy Spirit's in charge. Just look the Holy Spirit. And we were able to do something really wonderful. So don't, you know, second guess when the Spirit moves you to do something just small, just a small something. You know, just step in there because you don't know later on. I mean, I had no idea that I was going to single-handedly collect, you know, thousands of dollars for this project because I'm not a fundraiser. I mean, once I worked for Avon, and at the end, I owed them money. You know, that's how bad I am. But this was something that, you know, the Spirit just moved. I can sink my teeth into it. And it got off the ground, and it was wonderful. And then I can distance myself. I can detach and move on to the next thing. So never second guess what the Holy Spirit has in store for you. Any other questions? Can we get her the mic? I don't think everybody can hear her.
Carolyn, do you still want me to
share? Yeah, could you?
Okay. Here's one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm one of the senior of seniors here. I'm as one little boy told me yesterday, he said, "You're old." I looked at him, and these little brothers said, "No, she's not. She's young. But I'm in my fourth inning. My fourth whatever. At any rate, I want to talk to you, the UN. This predates the issues that we were facing, that we're talking about. Teilhard de Chardin was a consultant at some point to the UN. One of the ambassadors studied his life. I'm making a lot of skips here. I went to the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of his death in New York, and it was at the embassy there. It was the 50th anniversary of Teilhard de Chardin, a Jesuit. Do some of you know of him?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I might not be pronouncing it correctly. But at any rate, I have background there in some very fortunate ways. Okay, I went to that. I went to the anniversary, and there I became acquainted with the contributions that he had made through the UN. Okay, I went through. There were several days of meetings. It was just wonderful. Subsequent to that, I came back to Athens, Georgia, and I called the UN. I said, I have one copy of this book. And it had the religions of the world. It had something that he had inspired to be done. It had the basic religious principles from many religions. Just a beautiful thing. I said, I would like to buy some copies for the Catholic Center at Athens, Georgia. we have only 10 copies left, but you may have them. And so they mail them to me, and I have them. And they are absolutely beautiful. And the story goes on. So I just want to tell you, in that that has lived through a number of other organizations that have been spun by that. And I just had to say this to you, because I want to, in some way, inspire others to pick this up and to go and through the Franciscan, and forgive me for being spacey on this, but I had to stop to say it. I just, the Holy Spirit said, get up and go. My mother would say, go on, Virginia, do it.
Thank you.
Yeah, this question is for all of you. I'm pretty stupid. And I found out a long time ago when somebody says something and I don't know what they mean, I need to ask. I need to know from each one of you your definition of greed, since you used it, your definition of justice, and for you, Carol, gun safety, because you mentioned it this morning, gun safety, and that the NRA isn't for gun safety, was and remain a conscientious objector. I do know that the NRA is one of the biggest people for gun safety. So I need to know your definition of gun safety. Yeah. So for each one of you, your definition of greed and of justice, so that if we're going to talk to each other, we need to know what our definitions are.
I'm just wondering, asking, what is tomorrow's gospel? I've worked on it, and I can't even think of, but it's about greed. Oh, the man who man who wants the inheritance, and yes, and Jesus says, he tells the story about the man who has the marvelous crops, and he's going to tear down his barns and build more barns, and God says, you fool. Do you not know that your life is going to be demanded of you this very night? Now, what am I going to say about it tomorrow morning? that it's because the man says to himself, so to speak, my soul, and that's one of the translations, my soul, you have enough. So you can relax and so on and so forth. And it's the idea that he's only turned in on himself, and that's greed, and that he does not see this piled up wealth as more than his, as more than, well, Andrew Carnegie. Because that's something I read about how he said that he was a shepherd of his wealth. In other words, it was not only his, it was with others. And he built in the country 1,689, and I think that's exactly right, libraries all over the United States, which I didn't know before. And I just heard this week on NPR. But that is, for me, an alternative to greed. Now, I don't know how good a person he was or anything else, but he certainly had this idea that this world's goods was not just his. It belonged to us. It belongs to us. And as one person said to me once, when I said, I only have $12, and he said, that's a pure gift. Why are you complaining about that? So, thank you for the gospel. You want me to read tomorrow's gospel? No. Who gave this to me? Oh, okay. But somebody else might have a definition of greed.
I don't really think I can add more to that, but what comes to my mind right off is having more than that you really need. You know, you have needs and you have wants. And when I think of wants, I think of greed.
I had more time to think of the definition, and part of the first part of my definition was really having more, wanting more than you really need. But then there's a part B. And the part B is not appreciating what you do have. And they piggyback. That would be my sense of greed. And I hate to say it, but it's a sickness. And it's prevalent. It's a disease that's rampant in our country.
Before you got into that, I was going to say my definition of greed might be what's in it for me.
Can you hear me up there?
Yeah.
I'm the guy with the wife that lost the ticket, remember? There's the culprit right over there, everybody.
We found another ticket, too.
Carolyn, earlier today, you talked about the grain of truth exercise. I'd like to make a comment and then have you all talk a little bit about it. It seems to me that the grain of truth exercise really says something about how our polarized society can't come to any kind of meaningful dialogue. And I think it's true to say that here today, there are those who see things one way. I think we're a microcosm of the bigger society, but at least we're communicating, talking about it, whereas most of society has no interest in knowing what the other side has to say. And so your exercise is a form of education. And I think that it's an important exercise in that it allows us, according to some of the things you expressed, a way to see the other point. And until we start actually, in my humble opinion, seeing the other side and being able to articulate what they see. Now, one of the things that we did at the University of Georgia when I had my students is that they would say, well, I want to do a speech on capital punishment. Big broad subject, but or abortion. And some of the students had very strong religious viewpoints, one side. And they could never really, in my opinion, argue the other side. They didn't want to recognize the other side, see? So your point is well taken, and I think what we really need to do as far as being educated about this, we need to walk out of here today more than just hearing you say it, but, of course, educate and put into practice. And putting into practice means actually articulating the other side, not arguing against the other side, but saying, if I was on the other side of the argument, what would be the things that I would say? Then when you have a dialogue with somebody, you're not arguing anymore. You're communicating. Amen?
Amen.
Okay.
That was a political announcement. Wasn't really a question.
This is not an easy situation, but I need to bring it up. How do we bring or make awareness to administrators, let's say, in retirement settlements, or anyone concerned with matters of putting older, and I mean older senior citizens, into sanitizing euthanasia sanitizing suicide, sanitizing older senior citizens out of their environment and putting them into, quote, houses on a hill, let me finish this, like mental institutions, Alzheimer's places, or separating spouses because some one of them thinks that their spouse is useless and shouldn't be living with each other, or taking these people that are, quote, unquote, handicapped and just making them vanish. Now, that's powerful stuff. And I don't know how to handle that, and I don't know how we can handle that, but I need some help personally, and I think a lot of other people do too. And I want you to help us. Thank you.
Again, it begins with you. The way society has evolved from our way of being. It has taken cues from us as constituents, as citizens, as congregants, as parishioners. When I was at the confab last weekend, one of the speakers said the reason why it's called hoods is because we have forgotten the neighbor. Isn't that powerful? We've taken the neighbor out of neighborhoods. And we've just become isolated, separated, and disconnected. When we can become community again, the kinds of things that Betty mentioned won't be an issue. But it has to begin with each one of us. If I don't want my husband, my wife, my neighbor, my parents, if I don't want them put into any kind of living condition, if I am to have my husband, wife's family member, parents, I don't want those things to happen to them, then what am I doing about it? What's my part in it? It may be a small part, but it begins with continuing to be community. That starts at the ground level, fraternity, family, church, parish community. Sometimes we don't even have those things down. There's bickering amongst the family. So when Uncle Joe is said that he has to go into some kind of living facility, we have separated so far from Uncle Joe that we don't know what's going on anymore. All it takes is the dialogue. You don't have to sit and have Thanksgiving dinner with all these people, but perhaps just a bit of communication. Just pick up the phone. Hi, this is so-and-so. How are you doing today? Just call to see how you're doing. God bless your day. Stay connected. Because when we build a web of community, fraternity, those kinds of issues become non-issues. But it begins with us. Think about the words you use. Words can either hurt or heal. I prefer, instead of the word sin, how about using the word violence? It puts the onus back on you. Because I can tell when I'm being violent. I've said something, I've done something. As Sister was saying, I've gossiped. I became angry. That's violence. When I say I've sinned, sometimes that's a bit nebulous. We can't really bring that to home. But when I'm doing violence to myself or to another, that I can see. And to answer your question about the gun safety, for me, there's two basic emotions. We're either living in love or we're living in fear. I put the greed in the fear. I put the gun violence in the fear. Anything that's not love, the things I spoke of this morning, the patience, the kindness, the compassion, the listening, that's love. When I'm doing that, I'm loving. Anything other is fear. It's violence. And we need to call it what it is. Because when we can say, I'm being violent, then we can do something about it. Otherwise, we point the finger of blame. It's them. It's her. It's the government. It's the Republicans. It's the Democrats. It's the conservative. It's the liberals. Labels. Philosopher Soren Kierkegaard said, when you label me, you negate me. That's not loving. That's violence. Any other questions? Yes.
Thank you.
Recently.
I'm sorry.
I just want to respond to what Carolyn responded to. Recently, we had to put two of our sisters into a nursing home. And it was the hardest thing I think our community had to make, that decision. And it was not a Catholic nursing home. And in the beginning, I couldn't even stand going into the nursing home because of the smell. You know, and I think it's little steps sometimes, and when it touches home, we can make a difference. And in the last 2 years, 3 years, I've seen a great difference because when we go and visit our sisters every week, and we take turns doing that. But when you're there, you see all these other people and many that don't have visitors. And you look at them, and they're just as loving. They want dignity. They're humans, and we talk to them, and we treat them like we would treat our own. And you can see the difference. And I think that's the way we have to begin with change.
Comment on your question. I was in home care for 15 years, so I've seen this and all that sort of stuff. A caregiver to me is a living saint. I am, And I don't care who you are, if you're a caregiver, you're a living saint, because I know how difficult it is. One of the things you have to do, you have to get away, and I'm sorry, you have to take care of yourself. You tell your sister, your aunt, your brother, anyone you can, I need to go away tonight. I need to get away. And I'm serious. You have to take care of yourself. You cannot take care of anyone else if you don't take care of yourself. And that goes for all of you. And I need to give you my definition of greed. I don't know how many of you... the reason I asked this was... what is his name? Return to Virtue, that wrote Return to Virtue. He's a professor at Boston College. I just can't think of his name. Been there for years and has written many Catholic books. He's a convert to Catholicism. Yeah, Peter Croft. Creef Croft. And he was talking at our church. He came down to it and stuff and a thing. And I was afraid to ask the question, what is greed? Because I thought, oh, everybody knows what greed is. And afterwards, he was signing books and stuff, and I went up to him. And I asked him one-on-one, what is greed? And he looked at me, and I'm serious about this. He says, in all my time, nobody's ever asked me this question. And I could see his mind running like this. How am I going to answer this? Everybody knows what greed is. And he said, and I'll encapsulate it. He said, when you have an insatiable desire for anything, that is greed, where it cannot be satisfied. It's, when you said just for your needs, well, if you're going to take care of others, you had to get more than your own needs. And for us, for you that take a vow of poverty, that's one thing. But for us, we have to get more than just our needs taken care of so that we can take care of someone else and their needs that cannot have needs. So it's do not think that just getting what you need, if you get more than that, you're greedy, because you're not. It's what you do with that and how you transform that and stuff. So please understand that, that just because you're getting more than you need, that does not make you greedy. It's what you, how you transform that. The founder of Domino's Pizza, who is a multimillionaire, he delivered pizzas to my house, folks, when he started out. I'm from Ann Arbor. And he went to the same school I did and stuff. He's trying to give away all his money now, but he controls how it does so that it doesn't get spent and used poorly. But that is his desire. He's had everything. And now he's trying to get rid of it and trying to help other people. He found out that there's more joy and more love in giving to someone else. You get a whole lot more back than what you give to other people. I do something that I call some justice work. I believe that everybody that comes to this country should learn English. It is the language of money, and it's the language of law. And if you don't know English, you stay a second, third, fourth class citizen. I'm sorry, that's how I feel. I have three or four people that just show up for it. And I have told them, if only one of you come, I'm a success. I don't go by the numbers. The patron saint of my parish that we have is St. Peter Chanel. He was a Marist priest who for 25 years was a missionary, never converted a person, not one in the South Pacific. He was martyred. within 2 years after his death, the whole South Pacific Islands were converted because of, but he was stayed faithful to his mission was. Please stay faithful to your missions.
I got a question. How do you safeguard the name of social justice? It was so sweet and so wonderful, and then organizations like ACORN came in and misused the funds and changed the definitions, and how and to where a lot of people no longer wanted to give to social justice because it shadow people had come in and damaged. They had hijacked the good name of social justice, and so a lot of people stopped giving to that. And now, how do you safeguard against the socialist and communist coming in to, because their philosophy is a redistribution of wealth, but I know they mean it entirely different, where the government and the state is all important and the individual is not, and salvation is collective, it's not individual like Jesus set up. So I know your philosophy is Franciscan, but how do you safeguard against the people that would damage the good name of holy social justice? I don't know if that question is clear, but that's my question. Thank you.
By your fruits, you shall know them. In, for example, in Boston, when we set up the center for the homeless that now sees 1,000 people a day, one of the gentlemen who gave $500,000 to help us, he continues to give a considerable amount of money. 1 year he gave $1 million. But not only that, he's also now funded and given us money for our prayer center because he sees the fruits. And so there's never going to be foolproof where people are going to say, well, gee, I don't know if this is really working out, if they're really using the money wisely, so I better be cautious and not give. I don't give to some agencies myself when you get it in the mail because I'm not sure, and I know that 80% of the dollar goes to the fundraiser. So I like to know, and I like more information, what is happening with my donation. That's the best approach I can use. And, you know, as you know, the early church was very communistic. They shared everything in common in Acts, okay? But it was done for one purpose, for the sake of the Lord, that there was the spark of the divine in those who are needy, and we have to reach out to those people. The communist philosophy does not see it that way. So there is a disparity there. But there is part of the communist philosophy in the early church. It's the good part. It's the good part. That's the best way I can kind of address your concern.
Father, I would just say that our Blessed Lady in Fatima said that she put the word communism with the word atheist, and she said atheistic communism, and that's what I was referring to, not living in a commune or sharing everything you have like the apostles did and all the early disciples. We're all called to do that, to share our heart, our time, our treasure, our talent, whatever we have, because it's not ours anyway. It's all God's.
That's right.
We're all His, and everything is His, but I see so many elements of anti-Christ type of communism and socialism and Marxism that is infiltrating even into our city council in Asheville and other places throughout the world,
And our Blessed Mother, she begged for the rosary, the daily rosary, so that Russia would not spread atheistic communism throughout the world. And that's what I meant by that. And the Acorn people, they have morphed their name into other names. They keep changing their name to try to clean up their act. But these things are very dangerous. And I know a Franciscan heart going after poverty and working to help our undocumented brothers and sisters. I'm the godmother to three Hispanic people, and I see their plight. I was in Asheville when ICE came and deported half families, and the tears and the sorrow and the pain that we all suffered with that. At the same time, I want borders that can protect us from the drug cartel coming over here and spreading even more evil into the country. We need to really pray for those people. I know we do. We need to sacrifice and pray and put them in our heart and lift them up to God for a conversion of heart, and at the same time lift ourselves up for a conversion of our own heart. But but social justice now in many different places throughout the world has an association with the atheistic communism and with socialism, which is the rich people have a lot of money, but they're seemingly so generous with what they give, like the gentleman that gives $1 million to your beautiful programs. But it's not really up to us to demand that the rich take their hard-earned money or even their inheritance from their fathers and mothers and make me give it to an organization that the government might call the poor.
I don't think we can make anybody to do anything, to be honest. But as I preached some months ago at a particular parish,
yes, Father.
I said as a layperson, it would be very, very difficult for me that if I was a wealthy person, I would feel very uncomfortable if I didn't share a major, not 10%, but a major portion of my wealth with those who are less fortunate. I border. I don't want to be scrupulous. I'm overly conscientious. But it would bother me significantly. So if there was this inheritance, and once again, it's too strong a word, but I would feel obligated that I have to opt to make a change, to make a dent in the lives of others. I think that's part of our vocation call as a Christian. I really do. We've put all these regulations out in saying tithe 10%. I'm sorry, friends. I have a tough time with that. I don't buy it. It makes us comfortable. But sometimes we got to do more.
For 2 weeks in the bulletin, it had a blurb about social justice. 6 people showed up. We had 2 meetings, and we decided that we were going to turn off the water when we brushed our teeth. That was a start, and that was it. Haven't had anything else beyond that. Where do we go from here?
I think it's a start. I like it. I am a big bugaboo about water because I saw this film that was an hour long in one of our Just Faith programs, and we all concluded after 30 weeks that it was the finest film and it was the most awakening kind of film that we had seen all year. And it was about water rights and the selling of water rights, and it was about Bolivia and the Washington State and India. And in Washington State, it was a whole story about how The city wanted to sell the water rights to an independent company, and so the people in the city tries to raise awareness of what this does if we sell our water to an individual company and so on and so forth. They went to a vote and they lost. The people who did it, so it was sold to an independent company. In Bolivia, the people rose up because water is supposed to be a gift from God and so on. And they won in Bolivia. And in India, I don't recall, except that it forced the people who, they said, water was free and now we can't afford water because this was a poor community. And so what it did do was lead them to a resourcefulness to how to collect and save water for the future. And so something good came out of something that was difficult. But, you know, as you probably hear, they predict that the water in the future is going to be what war is fought over because of the scarcity of water. So it, from my mind, it's a huge issue. And if you start by saving it, turning it off while you brush your teeth, you've started. I don't know. But maybe they'll go further.
David triggered off something that's not pertaining to water, but it's to address that issue before about, I work very hard and I've earned this money and I'm entitled to use it for what I want. And so if I give $100 to the earthquake victims, we would call that charity. That's significant. That's a generous amount. That's what we call love. Justice is something different. It's giving to others what rightfully belongs to them. It's working on behalf of making sure that people, even though we are gifted, that they have quality of life, proper clothing, shelter, and also medical care. And that's justice. It's promoting that. Friends, justice is living out love to the fullest extent possible. And as Catholics, we sometimes have stopped with love. It's significant, but we got to go beyond that. I know I come on very strongly, but I believe that.
I think one of the things that I'm becoming more aware of, what Father's talking in terms of justice, my identical twin sister's in the Dominican Republic, and their big issue is electricity. And they're lucky in the barrio where my sister lives if they have electricity 3 hours a day. Because what they do is they turn off the generators in the poor section, and they keep them going in the rich so the rich can get their air conditioners going. And, you know, sometimes I Skype her. Sometimes we can only talk once a week for 10 minutes because the electricity keeps going off. And they do have a small generator so they can keep some things going in their home, in their convent. But it made me aware of how I wasted electricity. And I think, to me, awareness is really important. If we know how other people are living, we can then start with ourselves and not waste. We do a lot of wasting. The other thing is crayons in the school. There are children in that school that are 12 years old that never had one crayon. And at the time I was teaching in my other community, how we waste paper and crayons and pencils. We just keep consuming too much.
May I ask a question? I'm sorry, I came in a little bit late. This might have been addressed. But when you were talking about the early church, I remember St. Paul's, admonishing the people to work. And our Pope has recently, Pope Francis has addressed the issue of work and the young people, generations now growing up without working. And work gives a person dignity. And I just wondered if that's part of social justice, the opportunity to work. And I've worked with the Little Sisters in the Valley. I'm from Aiken, South Carolina. And one of their criteria was, I will help you, but you must do something for somebody else or somehow repay for our help. It gave them dignity. And I just want to remember, I think that's part of social justice too, very important part.
Hello, I just to the panel. I'm interested in infrastructure in the world and how we can go on limiting our use of the limited resources that we have. My interest is how to plug in to an apostolate that I can use my talent to push it forward in terms of environmental type things. In the U.S., we have an aging infrastructure, we have a poorly designed, you know, water distribution system. We live in cities which we pollute the air. We live with a government that, I guess, endorses pesticides and insecticides, and we live with all those sorts of problems. So with all that said, with limited time and talent, What we see in America today is that we have infrastructures that are failing, and we have poverty. So in those margins, do we rely on municipal authorities or state authorities to build those back for us? Or how do we plug in to make a difference? And how do we build the cities or the towns that are sustainable in the future in terms of quality of planet resources? And in terms of community health.
Well, again, the woman I mentioned, Sister Miriam Therese McGillis, has a lot to say about communities and how communities should be built in the future so that we do not deplete the land, and how we can live gracefully with nature and still not have colossal pieces of houses and land that just are for ourselves, but in other words, living in relationship to the world around and what's happening and the population. We already know, you know, it says increase and multiply and fill the world. We've filled it, so to speak, in the sense that if you need so much, an acre and a half or whatever, for each individual to survive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But she's one that you might be interested in accessing if you're interested in communities and building and how to do it and still live gracefully and wonderfully and richly. I take it you have a gift for making some contribution in the environment or something, right?
Yes, I'm a professional engineer, and I'm an environmental engineer, and have worked in pollution control
right.
for a number of years, about 30 years. So,
yeah, boy, we need you. but somebody else might have some suggestions.
I'm not sure how to. I think probably you're aware of going green, that whole thing. I know our new monastery, we looked into that, and we are on that list of being a green monastery. I don't know too much more than that, but the different things that we used and what we did instead of wasting things and using up the resources, that's just another way.
Once again, I think there's so many issues out there, whether it's fracking or this or that. But we also have to have a family life. We have to have a life. And so sometimes I'm one for baby steps. So like Father Dave said, you really probably have the assets there, the ability to really make a dent. And if you were to really concentrate on this one significant issue and really give what you're able to without affecting your family, I'm convinced just by your presence, just by what you said, that you, one person, can make a difference. And so I would just encourage you to pursue, even if it's the one thing, because the ramifications of that are significant.
I have a question myself. I'm kind of wondering, growing up, you know, we all see things black and white, right or wrong. I'm kind of wondering whenever it's time to put on or to see things in shades of gray. I've worked on a lot of cases. I've done a lot of habeas work in my profession. I'm a law librarian in the Superior Court in Athens, and I recently have. And we're recently finishing up a case involving a lot of bad things that happened to a couple of people, a woman and her daughter, back in 2002, rape, burglary, murder. The daughter had her tooth knocked out, and you know, it was just, to top it all off, the two individuals who committed these crimes burnt the house, and the daughter died of smoke inhalation. So, you know, I'm kind of. My question probably has to do more with capital punishment. When, you know, in a case like that, whether capital punishment is acceptable, even though he says, you know, even though he pleads that he has, you know, mental illness, the thing is, though, they reasoned this out, that he and another person decided on their own to do this, didn't hear any voices, didn't get any kind of commands or anything to do it. They just did it out of their own will. Paul says in Romans 13 that the government has a right and a duty to protect its citizens from aggression, and that the sword of justice will fall upon, you know, the wrongdoers, to put it, to kind of paraphrase. So I'm kind of wondering how one could really see things in a shade of gray in an instance such as that, and what the church's position would be on a case like that.
Read Sister Helen Prejean. Thank you, Carolyn. I don't know. Howard, you're challenging us.
Thank you. That's why I'm here.
Do you want anybody?
I shared my view with Howard before.
Louis has already responded to you, as have I.
Right.
Thank you. I don't know those views.
No, he was quizzing me before about the gray areas and how we're raised in a you know, things are black and white, and is there gray area, and how do you learn to evaluate that? And Howard and I have already talked. Anybody else? Howard, we're going to pass on you.
Comment, excuse me, you mentioned experience, and I think that's the crux of the matter. I knew a lot about poverty, heard about justice in the church for years, but until I worked with homeless families with children, did I learn for myself in my heart, in my gut, what it meant to be homeless, to be that poor, and with children. Please, so I suggest that we do the education part, yes, but volunteer, you need to get involved. That's all.
Not sure which one I want to continue from, but I'm going to go all the way back to greed. I'm going to go all the way back to greed. That question got me too. Okay, so what is greed? And we mentioned that having more, you're having wants and needs, and I see greed would be having not only your needs met, but also your wants, and then wanting more for your wants to the point of taking away from the other. I think we can have $1 million, but if I have a small little company and I'm hiring two people and they're getting minimum wage while my money is giving me a full life, not a living, more than a living life, and they're not even able to eat and support their family. So it's greed plus having all you want and taking away from the other directly. Now, of course, that puts me that I may not have the money, or I may have some money, but I don't hire anybody. I can't directly affect, so I may have to give it away or do whatever I can in another way. So greed was more than the wants and the needs. I'm sorry, I'm shaking. And then there was the other. I forgot it, so I guess it's not meant for me to say, and I'm not sure what issue it was. Okay, that's it.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm 50 and I have no children. And what I see is a perspective of people, of young mothers and fathers, not giving social justice to their children. Grandparents are raising them. Looks so much easier to get divorced than you can be a part-time parent. And I want to do something to express their blessings. And I don't know where to begin.
I didn't quite get your blessing. You want to do something to express your blessings or others' blessings?
Their children are blessings. I see them.
Oh, okay.
Not realizing their blessings, and they're putting them off to the grandparents to raise them. They're wanting to be a part-time parent by getting divorced. And it pains me to see that they don't recognize their blessings, and in the small church that we go to, it's very prevalent, and I would like to see some way to give social justice to these children.
I don't think I need a microphone. I'd like one. So I'm just here. Okay. I'm a school nurse, and every day I see kids like you're talking about. There is something each and every one of you can do, and it doesn't take a lot of time. There is a theory. Our children are disconnected. You can connect them by being a mentor. You can take one child and just give them the attention they need. And I'm not talking about money. I'm not talking about taking them places. Just talk to them. Just be there. Just be a phone line and connect. And you can change them to be incredibly gifted, talented kids with good self-esteem. They only need one adult to care for them. They don't need a mother. They don't need a father. Yes, they do, but if they're not there, you're never going to convince the parents unless they're open to that. But you can change a kid's life. My grandmother did it for me, and I do it for other kids on a regular basis.
I like to define greed, since that's the topic.
Sir, she just said, though, that you can't wait until they're old to do it.
Yeah.
You've got to get the kids when they're in the neighborhood a little bitty.
I'm sorry. And what Sari was saying there is that we see this not taking responsibility. It's easy for people to get divorced, become part-time parents, push the kids off, and there's grandparents that seem ready to take on that responsibility. No, I was just thinking about, you know, because of the greed thing that's been going around. We were driving up here, and we went past a big attraction that is has greed written all over it. You know what I'm talking about? Come on, let me hear it. Asheville? What's Asheville known for? Biltmore! And they built their wealth on the backs of who? The poor. And yet we enshrine... Anybody know what I'm talking about? And see, we put up, what, Biltmore Woods, Biltmore Estates. And you take your town, and anywhere in the U.S., you find similar setups. So greed is, and let me put it this way. It sounds like I'm being judgmental, but I'm making a point. I'm just making a point. I don't know that family, but I do know some history. So the question that we were talking about last night was at what point do you have more than enough? At what point do you just keep going for more and more. For us, we don't live in that world. But those that live in that other world, we're attaining it at the expense of others. So my definition would be at the expense of others, you are now starting to find a level of greed. Okay? Okay? That's just my point.
I just want to respond to your saying you're not being judgmental. You're not being judgmental. You're being observational.
Last question.
I have a very small question which builds on a number of the questions which have been raised this afternoon. And if I could just get, I know time is very limited now, but if I could just get a little answer from each of your panel members, I'll be very grateful. The questions which have been raised all deal with what is social justice? And the way I look at it, social justice is how we treat each other, how we treat the individual, how we treat society in such a way that it is consistent with the inalienable right of human dignity which has been given to them by God. This is Catholic social teaching, which is grounded in both Scripture as well as in the teachings of the popes, the encyclicals. The answers are all there, and if they're not there, they are evolving. If they are all there and we are concerned with this topic, why is Catholic social teaching the best kept secret of the church? What are we doing to, in education, to bring that more to home and to have it applied to the current social issues which we confront? Thank you.
Well, I'll respond this way, that Catholic social teaching often suggests that I might have to change from what I have settled with in my life and the way I look at it. And that's a scary thing. And therefore, as I still remember a seminarian saying, who was it? The Archbishop of Sao Paulo or whomever used to say, you know, I can talk about anything and get people behind me, but if I talk about, for instance, the poor, I stand alone. I can't get people behind it because it means we have to change.
I just want to say ditto.
And David just quoted Don Helder Camara, the Archbishop of Recife. To address your topic briefly, Kaz, I think once again, love is seeing the divine spark in every person. And justice is, what do I do with that? How do I address that if that divine spark is hurting, if there's some needs there? The same archbishop, when they vandalized the cathedral, they took out the ciboriums from the chalice, trampled on the ciboriums, and the people were wailing. They said they trampled on Christ. They pleaded with the archbishop to have a day of reparation. The day came where the cathedral was packed. There was an overflowing crowd, and the archbishop, you know, commended the people. You have wept, you have shed a tear over the fact that Christ was being trampled on. He says, the problem I see is Christ is being trampled on in the person of others every single day, and no one sheds a tear. Social justice
is shedding the tear and doing something about it, because that person is another Christ.
You have a lot of food for thought. Let's thank our distinguished panelists. Come on, show them some love. We thank each of them for taking the time to be with us, to share with us, to educate us. They too are on their journey, and it's nice to know that the entire Franciscan family, first, second, and third order, can journey together, asking questions, sharing stories, having a change of, as Father Louis said, change of mindset. Because that's what social justice is. It's shifting that mindset. Moving from your agenda to the greater good. That's our call as gospel people. So right now we're going to just take some quiet time. We're going to have... what is it, the evening prayer at 5? So just absorb. You've heard a lot. You've received a lot. Take a nugget or two. If you're a journaler, journal something. Pray about something. Also, call to mind the person that you're praying for this weekend. You're being social justice for that person as well. Remember, prayer, contemplation of who we are, as well as what we do. So again, we thank you for your attention. And if you have any questions, you know to stop me along the way. Father Louis is leaving us in a few minutes, but we thank him immensely for his wisdom, his insight, and his passion. I felt his passion. We thank Sister Bernadette Marie for sharing the second order with us. They're not all cloistered, you know. We can steal them out of those cloisters. And then Father David. And don't ask him to do the bump. I tried that.